In James chapter 5 and verse 16, we find the words, "The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much." The Bible goes on to record that Eli was a man of like nature to ourselves, and he prayed earnestly that it would not rain. And it did not rain for 3.5 years. And then the Bible records that he prayed again, and God returned the rains to water the land. The phrase in James 5 and verse 16 in the original languages mean the effective fervent prayer of a righteous avails much. The word man is not there. And therefore, the words refer to a person, can apply to both men and women. This evening I want us to look at the wonderful example of faith being exercised and faithful praying being made by this woman called Hannah, who we read of in 1 Samuel a moment or two ago. Hannah exercised faith and prayed faithfully in difficult and trying circumstances. In addition, the records we have of some of the events in Hannah's life barely cover the words of 2 chapters, and then she seems to fade into history. But although we know very little about Hannah, there's much to us to learn concerning this godly woman. I think it would be correct to say that there are some significant parallels of the circumstances in which Hannah lived to the circumstances that prevail today in a number of quarters. So whether we are male or whether we're female, are we going to be encouraged by Hannah's faith and her prayer life in the providential circumstances that she faced? Is she going to be, by the grace of God, an example to us? One question that naturally arises from the scripture and from what I've said so far is, so what were Hannah's circumstances? Well, she knew personal tragedy in her life. Hannah did not have any children. For the majority of women, and for those men and women who are married and do not have children, such stress must be very difficult to bear, and difficult to bear on particular occasions. As a man, I must be careful in terms of what I say. These are delicate issues. But I'm cautious that for women who are single and women who are married but do not have children, the natural instinct of God gives them the desire to have children, and not to have children must be of great distress in their singleness or in their childlessness. Obviously, those stresses and strains can be overcome by the passage of time and can be overcome by grace, but nevertheless, in the immediacy of seeking to have, by the grace of God, children, those things can be very stressful and trying. However, the circumstances that faced Hannah are not circumstances that women would be faced with childlessness today. In the days that Hannah was living, childlessness would be seen as a curse, and the implication was that the woman had disobeyed God in some way. So Hannah was not only facing personal tragedy in her life at this moment in time, she was facing social stigma as well. Hannah had a loving husband in Elkanah who treated her very, very well. He loved her very much. But I have to say that he did not understand the needs of his wife at this point, because we're told in verse 10 of chapter 1 that he said, "Am I not better to you than 10 sons? That response from Elkanah was probably typical then and typical today of many men. And I can say personally that it took some very loving words from my wife Barbara for me to come to understand that about 9 or 10 months after Jenny was born, our first child, that she needed to have another baby. We don't always understand, us men, do we? But her circumstances, Hannah's circumstances, contained further heartache. It was not only a personal tragedy. She had to cope with domestic rivalry. Elkanah had another wife, Peninnah. And Peninnah, it would seem, had been given many sons and daughters. Peninnah was a woman who gave Hannah much abuse, because the scriptures tell us that she provoked Hannah severely to make her miserable. Given Peninnah had many children, can we not conclude that Hannah's suffering from her had gone on for many, many years, which only added to the distress and discomfort that Hannah felt? It's an indication to us in these circumstances that three in a marriage, and I say with respect, is one woman too many, and certainly against God's perfect plan of one man and one woman in marriage. The folly of such arrangement is summed up by William Cooper in this way: if John marries Mary, and Mary alone, 'tis a very good match between Mary and John. Should John wed a score, oh, the claws and the scratches, it can't be a match, 'tis a bundle of matches. Many a true word is said in that ditty. But you know, it's frightening that people like Natalie Bennett, the leader of the Green Party, and other people as well, want a law passed so that there can be multiple men and multiple women in a so-called marriage, or perhaps I should say domestic relationships. It's frightening just how far our country wants to go. But there's more. Not only was Hannah coping with personal tragedy, not only was she coping with domestic rivalry, she was facing national apostasy as well. She lived at a time of backsliding on a national scale amongst the Jewish community. Religion, we could say, was at a low ebb. God's people were not where they should be. Poor spiritual life and leadership was evident from the top downwards. Eli, the high priest, had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, and they were godless and immoral people. They were not examples, not good examples. And Eli was struggling to control them. We are told in other parts of Scripture, if a man cannot control his home circumstances, then he should not be in leadership of God's people. It would have been difficult for Hannah to have sought counsel and wisdom from another believer in these circumstances. In fact, Eli had totally misunderstood her and grasped the wrong reasons as to why Hannah was praying as she did. Eli thought she was drunk and challenged her about her conduct, saying, "How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you." Eli jumped to the wrong conclusion and did not deal with Hannah in a pastoral way by recognizing that she was praying out of a sorrowful spirit. She was praying out of anguish of heart. It's a pitiful picture, isn't it? And we're led to ask the question, is there any way that we can identify with Hannah and the circumstances that she was facing? Let me give you some examples. Do you have any personal tragedies in your life? I know some of you have had personal tragedies in your life, some much more than others. Perhaps you've asked children, asked God for children, and you do not have any. Perhaps you've asked God for a husband or a wife, but one has not come along. Perhaps you have a loved one who you thought would be fit and healthy, even into your senior years, but you're having to nurse them through sickness and perhaps even long-term illness. Yes, such circumstances cause great stress and heartache, and even cause you to say, "How long, Lord? How long?" Or, "Why should these circumstances happen to me?" These things come to Christians' minds. Do you have to cope with domestic rivalry or heartache? I'm not saying if you're married, there's another woman in your home, or another man, or perhaps I should say as well. But what about your sons and daughters? Children you've nurtured over many years. Children you've prepared to go into a world with principles and with potentially strong enough understanding of what they're going to have to cope with, but then find, much to your dismay, notwithstanding they've had those principles, notwithstanding they've had that teaching, they're basically screwing up their lives. Perhaps your offspring are still unbelieving, so you experience the stress and heartache that it causes. Are you coping with family rivalry? Perhaps you've been a favourite or a cherished child of your parents, or one of your parents, knowing that your brothers and sisters have been looked upon without the same favour. But now you face a time where there is much resentment that's shown by your brothers and sisters. Perhaps bitterness is shown by them, perhaps even anger. Or you're being given the cold shoulder in a set of circumstances. Or you're certainly left out of the remaining family decision-making process. Perhaps other family members expect more of you in family life and take advantage of your generous spirit as a Christian to a degree that's totally unjustified. You bear the greater load, while others appear to live a life without bearing their proportion of the responsibilities of family life. Perhaps your husband or wife is not a Christian, and you face regular difficulties about what you believe to be your wise approach to your Christian commitment. Or if your husband or wife is a Christian and they do not have the same desire to serve in the way you do, there may be tensions that occur, or heartache that's felt. But how about spiritual apostasy or the low ebb of Christian life? Are you feeling you're not really cared for by your Christian brothers and sisters? Nobody's really concerned about me. I'm not part of the in crowd, some would say. Or has your pastoral oversight not been up to standard? You've been misunderstood. You've been dealt with harshly, or even in a threatening manner. And I know there are people that have faced those things. Are you wondering what's going on in the true church of Christ today? People do not seem to be committed. People do not seemingly want to live a godly life. Are you concerned with what you see written and typed, and the type of photographs that are posted on Facebook by some Christians? They tell a lot. Do you feel that what the church does in many quarters is man-centered and not God-centered? Where is the church in the UK going to be in 5 or 10 years unless God intervenes by his Spirit? But how do you feel about your circumstances? As Brian Edwards has said in his book, God's Little People, Little Women in the Bible, Hannah was finding it hard to accept God's will. That is not an uncommon Christian experience, when we find it hard to accept God's will, or are resentfully disappointed in the way something has turned out. But how did Hannah react? What was Hannah's reaction? Well, Hannah's faith was God-centered and real. We're told in verse 7 that Hannah went up to the tabernacle to worship in Shiloh year by year with her husband Elkanah. That is not something she had to do, because the Lord did not demand that a wife should accompany her husband, but Hannah went nevertheless. So like Hannah, we should seek to worship with the Lord's people as often as it is possible in the circumstances that Providence has given us. We cannot grow in love for God or for each other if we do not worship together in obedience to God's command. Hannah continued to pray and weep before the Lord. To pray and to weep are not contradictory. To pray means Hannah's heart was in the right place. It was evidence of her faith. Does such a disposition possess me? Does it possess you? As Brian Edwards says in his book I quoted earlier, to weep about your problems is not necessarily a lack of trust or a lack of confidence, but it's simply an expression of your emotion and that is what God has given us tears for. Hannah went to pray with the confidence of knowing, I believe, and I quote from John Newton, that everything is necessary that God sends our way. Nothing can be necessary that he withholds. Are Newton's words hard to accept? In one sense, yes, but that's the nature of true Christian faith. But what of the way Hannah prays? She prays like this: if you will indeed look upon the affliction of your maidservant. How reverently she approaches the living God. She did it by the word of the use, by the use of the word if. Let me quote again. Hannah did not presume to instruct God. She was prepared to leave the outcome in his hands and let him decide. That's a wise thing to do. Do we approach God in such a way, or do we come to him with a demanding spirit? But Hannah did not forget God's goodness to her, and we see her expressing that in the exalted words of her prayer that are recorded for us in 1 Samuel 2, 1-10. We so easily forget to be thankful, don't we? We receive a gift or an answer to prayer and forget to give thanks to God. As Philippians 4:16 reminds us, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made to know to God. But Hannah's faith was also faithful and sacrificial. Hannah made a vow before God, and we read of it in verse 11, where it records that Hannah was to do something. She says, I will. What we learn from Hannah, what is it that we learn from Hannah's vow? Do not forget your promises, and particularly those promises made to God. They're easily said, but they're easily forgotten too. God looks for obedience. He does not look for sacrifice. He looks for integrity from us. Hannah did not forget her vow. When God enabled her to conceive and Samuel was born, she nurtured him until he was weaned, which means in those days that Hannah cared for him until he was a youth. Then she gave him to the Lord, at the time her only son. What a sacrifice. But what can we learn? And it's crossed my mind yesterday, is there a parable in Hannah's sacrifice with God giving his only son for his church? I leave you to contemplate on that. Godly mothers, and indeed fathers, have a profound effect on family and the neighbourhood. If you're known for your godly life, which will include integrity, you're going to be increasingly recognized for your truthful, consistent faith and biblical principles. Men and women might not agree with you, but they will say that about you. How we need such living and such praying by Christian women and men today. Women like Jane Campbell, the mother of Duncan Campbell, who said of his mother that he owed her a great debt. Or Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote the book Uncle Tom's Cabin, which beautifully illustrates the gospel of Christ, and who also went on to be very influential in the abolition of the slave trade in America. Or Jonathan Edwards and his wife Sarah, who had a profound effect upon their children and on the generations that followed by their children. As Proverbs 1:8 tells us, my son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. Godly mothers and fathers, godly men, godly women who do not have children can have a profound effect upon those that are growing up by their nature and by their character and the way they live in faith. But Hannah also remembered Samuel when he was serving the Lord, because we are told in 1 Samuel 2:19 that Hannah used to make him a little robe each year when she came to sacrifice at Shiloh. A godly mother's love rarely falters for her children, even when she knows she has to give them up, her child, to live an independent life in this world, because our children are ours but for a season. And a correctly focused father can leave a wonderful legacy for future managers, for future family members as well. But what of God's response to Hannah? God is no man's debtor. Yes, Hannah gave up her firstborn son. She wasn't to know that God would give her any more children, but he did. In 1 Samuel 2:21, we're told Hannah gave birth to further children, 3 sons and 2 daughters. I said at the beginning, the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous person avails much. Hannah's prayers availed much as well, didn't they? May God be pleased to use men and women today, like he used Elkanah and Hannah in prayer and godly living, for who can tell what gift may be given to you in terms of the conduct and faith of your children or your children's children that will be used by God like the gift of Samuel to Hannah.